foundation called Open Media Now, and he'll talk about rich media and how the freedom of software can be applied to modern culture, really. And Rob's been around since 1987 in free software. He has worked on a lot of projects and has been influential to a great many things in what we today call GNU/Linux. So please give a warm welcome to Rob and listen to his talk, it's very important.
So if I talk too fast, make funny faces, I was up very late doing a software release. Everybody here knows how that is. And basically, yeah, I was going to talk about how free and open software helps have free and open societies. Basically, our nonprofit is in the United States, based in Colorado, and we have a very internationally distributed team. I think in our engineering staff, we cover something like 8 or 9 different countries. We really like the diversity that the international team kind of gives us a lot for our projects. And our primary goals are basically we fund various open media related projects to free up our usages of file formats and things, which I'll get into. And we also do a lot of work with the legal issues surrounding file formats, since a lot of times using a file of a certain format, like Flash, to be honest, has got legal issues more than technical ones. And we also do a lot of work with educational software organizations. There's a lot of the early adopters of our Flash-based technology and stuff, the $100 laptop, the OLPC, and a bunch of other people all use our software for their media handling. Our current big supported projects are Ganache, which is an Adobe Flash player, compatible Firefox, Mozilla, Conqueror, Qtopia plugin for a lot of different systems. It does YouTube and Google Video and, you know, what most people expect from a, you know, Flash plugin for a web browser. We're also working on a thing called Signal, which is an Adobe Media Server clone, basically, that actually does free, patent-free formats and free digital files. And we also work on a thing called Ming, which we use to create Flash animations and movies and things like that. And so we basically cover Flash as our sort of preferred internal format, since it's very locked up, and all these things relate to building an infrastructure for using this format with 100% free software tools. I was going to start by stealing a few things that we think of as the free software freedoms from an old friend of mine, Richard Stallman. He explains this better than anybody, so I figured I would just borrow his words. He said it was okay. So his thing is freedom zero, the freedom to run the program as you wish for any purpose. A lot of times we have restrictions that you can't always run something where you want. You may have something on your Windows platform and you can't run it on, you know, your Macintosh or your GNU Linux platform or whatever. And that actually can become a real problem. There's a lot of other ways this works where, for instance, I ported Ganache to the Apple iPhone. Apple keeps bricking my phone and turning it into a piece of useless silicon. So that's not much freedom to run my program that I wrote on anything that I wish. So Apple's not a very open company. And that's an important freedom. The freedom to study the source code and to make the changes you wish. While not everybody here is an engineer, there's a lot of engineers. And many times you always go, oh, if I just had the code, I could make Photoshop work right, or whatever it is that you're using, GIMP or something like that. And one of the freedoms we have is that if we have the ability, if we have the resources of the code, we can make the changes to suit our needs. The other big thing where it starts to apply more than what we need is how we can help the neighbors. So for instance, if a neighbor, And so a lot of times, you know, the advantage of free software is it gives us the resources to help people. A classic example of this is I live in a very rural area, and my local town government came up to me one day and they said, we can't read any files anymore. We have to buy all new computers for everybody. And I'm like, what? And so I went into their office and I visited them, and it turned out that somebody had bought a brand new Windows machine, and none of the people that worked in our town who were running Windows 95 could even read their files anymore. So I could give them open office, they could read all their files, and they saved thousands of dollars of having to buy new hardware. You know, another good example is the Beyond the SCO Linux project, which is because GNU Linux is a resource to them, they have the code, they've been putting their own efforts, I believe mostly volunteer and other things, into creating a distribution to help their neighbors, their neighborhood schools, and all those things. And part of the trick is not just making changes, but actually being able to redistribute those changes. It wouldn't do me any good if I took open office into my local town and said, oh, well, we have to pay $100 per copy. Instead, I can just give it to them because I'm allowed to redistribute, which is very critical. You know, the wider community, you know, is even more important because sometimes you want to be a lot larger than that. One of the ways I've seen that free software is useful in my area, a couple years ago, all of the internet companies in Colorado refused to bring internet access to my town. They just said, no way, not enough people, not worth it, go away. And so we said, oh, well, we should do this, but we live in a remote area without a whole lot of funding. So using GNU Linux and a bunch of cheap PCs bought off of eBay, we built one of the largest wireless networks in the state of Colorado, covering about 100 kilometers of the mountain range, pretty much over 3,000 to 4,000 meters. And if we had not had this ability of having GNU Linux, typically Debian-based, we wrote all of our own software for access points. We didn't barely pay anything for anything, and it's completely sort of mostly volunteer community-run network that has enabled many, many people to both work at home, to have an ability to help educate their kids more at home because we can bring them cheap, free internet access. And without, you know, the ability to redistribute and really help the neighbors, we'd have never done this if we had had to buy commercial equipment for this. You know, another good example, helping your community. Writing educational software is a huge help to your community. And it's just, you know, it's hard to write software from scratch, and so being able to use existing software tools and base your work on that is an easier way to help your community because the best free software projects are typically built on the work of others. You know, we encourage sharing and working together instead of just saying, well, give me $100 for that copy. And then the other thing of this is that with our own projects, we realized a few years ago that the internet was becoming inaccessible to those of us who wouldn't run Adobe Flash. Some of us are fanatics about it, and I'd never run Adobe Flash. And I found out that I literally couldn't go to websites. So we started the Ganache project to figure out how the Adobe Flash player works to write a free implementation so that we could actually do that and been distributing it around the community, much like we see, because Flash doesn't really run on that many computers unless you happen to be basically Microsoft and Intel platforms. And so we've helped our community that run on different computer chips, different languages, different fonts and things. And by our ability to actually use the software that we've created and giving it to the community, it lets us put our efforts of our handful of people to helping a lot more. I've always added this one to Richard Stallman's list, although I think he may add this one soon, which is the freedom to access my own files without limitation. There's a couple good examples here. In the United States, Walmart, which I hope isn't here in Norway yet, for many years had a music store selling music protected by DRM, Digital Rights Management Technology. Last month, they announced they're shutting down their music store and turning off the servers. Thereby, every single person who had paid for music on their computer, legally owned it, is losing access to their music at the end of the month. They'll never be able to play it again because the server that they have to access to play the song is going to be turned off. So it's actually your own files that you legally own aren't yours anymore. You don't actually own them. You're just kind of renting them, I guess. Same thing in my town. Since Windows, typically Microsoft Office, only supports one or two old versions, in my town, six or seven people that work in the government, everybody had different versions of Office. Nobody could exchange files at all. And that was where OpenOffice was very useful because the people on Windows 95 can still talk to the people on Windows Vista. Now they just use OpenOffice, so they don't have to convert around. And another example is one of my children was visiting. He's in his 20s, and we pulled some files of his from when he was a child off a computer. The files he had created with Microsoft Office 1.0 were completely unreadable, even by OpenOffice. And he lost access to the stories that he wrote as a child when he was younger, just gone forever, just never to be usable. He found some other files created with an old program called Xfig, doesn't matter if nobody's heard of it. 20-year-old files worked great on GNU Linux, out of the box, no changes whatsoever. Why? Xfig is an open format, it's all free software, I just recompiled it from my computer. He had access to all the drawings he did as a little kid, which was kind of, he was very happy about that. And that was a good example to me. When I use proprietary tools, I get stuck not being able to use the stuff that's mine that I created with my own efforts. And free software preserves, you know, what I create for myself. So one of the things of why open media is important is basically this. You know, you can lose access to things, you know. Another good example is I did a talk a couple months ago on open media for a group, and they gave me a copy of my talk and video. It's unplayable on anything but an Apple iPod. So I can't even see my own talk because I don't have a computer that's got a compatible format, which is kind of a problem. Another example as far as historical things is I've had some data files when I worked for NASA that were probably 35 years old, and they needed to read these for some scientific project. They had all the software that accessed these files. I put it into GNU Linux in a few days, and they could access all their data. You know, free software preserves your ability to access your own files for as long as you need to. And then the point is, it's more than just us. I mean, everything we put on the internet is never going away. Everything we do now is going to be there for hundreds or thousands of years. People may want to access YouTube centuries from now to see how culture was right now. And it's really important that we use formats that don't lose their ability to be used by other people. And the same thing with my kids' files, you know. 10 more years from now, nothing might have been readable anymore. Another big thing, too, is even where my town is when they first had this problem is they lost an ability to access the town water records. They couldn't access the town tax records. You know, same thing with all these things kept in strange proprietary formats. When their accounting system crashed, the company turned out to be out of business, and they had to recreate the entire town accounting system from scratch for very painful months of typing in data by hand. Another nice thing, I think, too, about education use. When we teach children to use proprietary tools, basically, these companies don't have our interests at heart. I mean, not to bash Microsoft, but yeah, I mean, my children cannot access their files created with Microsoft Office. And Microsoft could care less about whether my children can access their files. They don't care about us, they care about themselves. So I think teaching children to use tools that lock you into files that you can't potentially read in a few years is not really good for your general society. I mean, when we create creations, especially in the educational realm, they should be available for a long time. You know, teaching somebody mathematics doesn't really change that much over the time. And if you have a great program for teaching multiplication or spelling, you should be able to use it in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years without a problem. I think teaching the kids to use free software is very good because we encourage the children to help each other. I know that in our local area, we used to do simple computer classes where some of the children taught the other children. Why? They were all using GNU Linux. They had the ability to show them how to do things and to access things. And they have an ability to write little programs for each other to do stuff and websites and things like that. And it was very useful to see the students learning that working together, sharing their efforts, is actually a really good thing, because we can all do more what we create together than anything any of us can do individually. And I also think that schools should really set a good example for the students, rather than saying, well, you have to learn this Microsoft Office tool or Photoshop or whatever. Is basically locking them into using some large company's files and things. And I think it's good to teach students that helping oneself, helping one's community, helping one's neighborhood is really good. Because, I don't know, the more we help people, I think the more we realize how alike we are, and it keeps us together and spend less time fighting and trying to kill people. So a couple of formats, this is the fast technical bit, is there are several formats that aren't very good to use because they become inaccessible. You know, various formats that we all use today, GIF, Flash files, MP3s, there's not, even though there's free tools for this, we can't legally use them. They can change the formats, they're often undocumented, and so many times using these non-free formats is what locks us into what the companies would like us to do. Using these the free formats kind of keeps us from being locked in so that we can continue to access our own files for as long as we want to. As far as working with free tools, I figure most people here aren't engineers, but I figured I'd throw some help up. So there's a lot of software that you can use for working in 100% free format, so you don't even have to care what you're doing. They just keep working for a long time. Open Office, of course, everybody's used to it. You know, I use it for all of our word processing, presentations like right now, drawings and things like that. The ODF format is actually a very good one as far as a lot of things go. Vector Graphics, there's a great program out there called Inkscape, so you can do graphics and simple animations and things like that. Instead of Photoshop for editing photos, we all use GIMP, which most people have probably heard of. For video editors, which is kind of an up and growing thing in the sort of free software world, is having good video editors. Many of the video editors are a little bleeding edge still, but they're all slowly getting there. And as far as web page editors, you know, Mozilla Communicator, as opposed to the Firefox version, has actually got one of the best web creation tools I've ever worked with. It's very simple. My children can learn it at a very easy age. And, you know, HTML is actually not such a bad file format for a lot of things. My children use Mozilla Communicator as their text editor, that and VI. They don't like Emacs. When you get into non-free files, there's a problems there. Because the non-free formats, we have problems accessing. You know, they change. They're not always documented, so we have difficulties. So for instance, if you have, you know, Flash files, like the Flash plugin that we're used to, Ganache, of course, for playing Flash files. Both Ming, MTask, and Hacks are tools for creating Flash files that are all free software. For video, most people have heard of MPlayer, Xion, VLC, Ogle, Totem. People, all those programs and stuff, you can download these slides, so you're going to have to write these down. But these are all the different things that we use for dealing with non-free formats. The problem is that supporting a lot of these file formats, it's not a technical problem, but a lot of times it's a legal and political one. For instance, MP3 support, most people with GNU Linux systems play MP3 files, but you can't, if you're a distribution like SCO Linux, redistribute working MP3 support without basically paying somebody. So that's kind of one of the problems with these kind of formats, is that although the free software tools work with them, the manufacturers of these formats feel reasonably open to making changes when they want to, because they don't really care about you. They make a change because they want some new feature to sell you something all new. And basically, sort of as a, I guess my sort of final point is, you know, we create files every day. We write stories, we edit things, we do spreadsheets, we do a lot of different stuff. We should really use open formats so that we don't lose access to what we create, because the documents we create are important. They should live on, especially in the education world. And a lot of times, as gaining control of your data is sort of, I think, a lot more important than the fact that, you know, GNU Linux is free. I mean, free cost is one thing, but having the freedom to access the files that you create and your friends create and that you share, to me, seems a lot more important to sort of the no-cost aspect of free software, which most people is all they really think about. You know, using free software is just more than saving a little bit of money. It's actually giving ourselves the freedom to help the society, the community around us, and the sort of you know, future generations that want to use our creations now. Went through that too fast. I'll back up a little. So some of the other examples of people actually using free formats.
Part of the computer instead.
Huh?
Part of the computer.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Just as a notice, when people think about free formats, they go, well, nobody's actually using these. Right now, the OLPC project, the little green machines, they only use patent-free formats that are legally usable by free software. And so the OLPC project only uses Ogg Vorbis and Theora on the list. The advantage is that anything that the children using the $100 laptops create will be accessible for other children for as long as they feel like accessing it. They would be very upset, I imagine, like my own children, to find out that 10 or 15 years from now what they created is completely unusable. The Internet Archive, if anybody's familiar with the Internet Archive, they also now support Ogg Vorbis and Theora free formats for audio and video, so that they can legally not worry about losing the access to their own information. Wikipedia is also now collecting Ogg Vorbis and Theora-based audio and video and redistributing that because they legally can. And so a lot of these things are not exactly just a research project anymore. A lot of this stuff is actually going out into standardly being used by real companies doing real things. And one of our goals with Open Media Now is to continue building the tools to make using all of these legally free, legally redistributable formats completely accessible so that we can all create files, view them, and use them for as long as we ever want to. That's the freedom to do what we want, to redistribute and to help our community through our own efforts and creations. Any questions?
You finished?
Faster than I thought, but yes.
Any questions?
Rob?
Sure.
Can you show some NS things?
You just released something. You just released something. Should you mention that?
Oh yeah, we just did our software release this morning. Of the latest release of Ganesh, which, as I said, has full support for all the popular video streaming websites and things like that. So we're kind of excited, even though it's been a few long days.
Excuse me, I think people perhaps need to know a bit more about Ganesh. What Ganesh is. Can you just...
Ganesh is a free software project started 5 years ago to create a free alternative to the Adobe Flash Player plugin. Many of us see how Adobe Flash is everywhere. And what happened was at one point when web browsing, people used Flash for menus. People used Flash for image maps. And it got to where without Flash, us free software people couldn't work on the internet anymore. And so we created the Ganesh project because that was sort of the last big gap in the free software world. We are now a high priority project of the Free Software Foundation, and we work very, very actively on having a Mozilla Firefox Conqueror web browser plugin for Adobe Flash, as we also run standalone, so we can actually do Flash applications without even a web browser and things like that. And so Ganesh is our version of the free software version of the Adobe Flash Player, which has no documentation, and all of the formats are basically locked up by Adobe, and we spend a lot of time figuring out how they do things to sort of free up that format so that everybody can just use it. And maybe someday it'll be a free format, but it's not yet.
This Flash thingy, which pops up on the internet years ago, and all people feel very happy to use it and to do all the things they want to in Flash files, probably doing it on the internet. So my question is, why are only companies doing eventing such things like Flash? Why do not the community event before other things? Is there any answer?
Well, companies like to invent their own formats that you have to keep buying their products.
Yes, but why not event? Why doesn't the community event the future?
Yes.
Before companies do that.
And you know, you'd have to ask the general community. We have a lot of questions where people say, why aren't you building a tool that is better than Flash, that's new, that creates a 100% free world? We're actually working towards that. You know, Flash, we're not locked into using a sort of Flash file format. But at the same time, is there are millions and millions of files in existing proprietary, unaccessible formats. And so first we want to give ourselves the ability to access those older files. And then as we gain that ability, we'll start also working on giving people more freedom to do their own thing in a different way.
Yeah.
It's a big project.
Yes, well, I don't have a background in engineering, so be excused for that. But from a user perspective, what's the difference between a standard, for instance, MP3 standard, and a free format?
You know, the MP3 standard is an interesting one because unlike some formats and standards, it doesn't change that much anymore. People just invent MPEG-4 and, you know, there'll probably be an MPEG-5 or something. And so they kind of just ignore that and go off to new formats. The free formats have a big advantage is that they're widely documented and there's also a lot of tools that can legally access. Because the problem with MP3 is not technical. It's easy for me to take an MP3 file, decode it, and play music with it, technically. But legally, I can't give you a copy of the software that does that. And with free formats, I can legally give you a copy of the software to play that. So that's sort of the big difference, that is that with free formats and free tools, you can redistribute, and with non-free tools, even like MP3, which is a standard, you still cannot legally redistribute that software.
What's Ganesh's place in education? For teaching?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we work with about 3 or 4 different educational products, basically, companies making typically these small machines and things that are all using Ganesh. It turns out there's a lot of educational software written in the Flash format. And so once again, you know, do we develop new tools that create all new educational software from scratch, or do we take advantage of the work of many, many people over quite a few years of effort that have developed good programs for teaching physics or chemistry or mathematics and stuff? And so we find that Ganesh is becoming somewhat more popular just because we run better on old hardware. We support a lot more different kind of computers and stuff than even Adobe does. So I think that, you know, the advantage of, for instance, the LLPC is not running on Intel processors. So, for instance, having, you know, I think it's good for education because they have all this content, they don't have to reinvent it all from the beginning again. And Flash is kind of a nice tool for simple animations for non-programmers, which I think does make it a good format for educational uses, especially now that it's becoming free.
More questions?
Okay. I was impressed from the demonstration what I saw there. It would be nice to have really a demonstration what they are. What they are doing with these Ganesh things. I saw it while they were developing in the university, so it was really amazing. So what you demonstrate on the one laptop per child?
If you want, I have Ganesh running on my one laptop. Yeah, for child computer, I can go grab.
You have 20 minutes.
You can show it, yeah.
Do? Yeah. Okay, I'll go do it. If I had my laptop plugged in, I'd show you right now.
I'm the School Linux developers, and we are supporting the Ganesh project because we want to provide a Flash player with the distribution. But the license from Adobe permits us from actually distributing Flash. So that's why we are focusing on getting a free alternative to be able to play YouTube or the NRK Market Boston or whatever Flash application that is out there, national tests, stuff like that. And the license, the legal limitations provided by Adobe prohibit us from providing what we want from Adobe. So we have to find alternatives. And we tried to contact Adobe and ask if we could get an exception from the from the license, and they say nothing, actually.
So you have a download Flash after installed.
Yeah. They can, we cannot distribute it ourselves. People have to download it directly from Adobe. That's the limitation of the license from Adobe.
But if you enter a Flash page and you don't have Flash downloaded, it automatically asks for Adobe Flash Player. Yeah. Isn't it possible to ask for Ganesh now?
Actually, that's built into the web page itself. Typically, when you have a link that's loading a Flash file on a web page,
it
actually has tags in the HTML tag that goes to the Macromedia website with a special key that tells them where you're downloading it. And it's pretty much everywhere. It's like a virus. And changing that would require changing millions of websites.
Yeah. But then in the Debian when you download Debian, it's possible to incorporate Ganesh then now because it's free.
The next version of School Linux have Ganesh in it.
Yes. So you don't need to download Adobe then.
You don't need to have this mechanism bypassing this mechanism when you have Ganesh. When Ganesh works, you can distribute with the system. So you don't need to advertise where to download it because you don't need to go to their company.
No.
It's a website.
No, but the installation that's out now, you always get forward to Adobe.
I was talking to the IceCat people that do the sort of 100% free version of Firefox, and one of the things we joked about was adding code to the browser that when it sees www.macromedia.com, they're actually not using the Adobe URL, that it would actually redirect it to our website, getganesh.org. That would be a fun hack. We'll start a new virus. The GNU virus.
Okay.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know a number of proponents of open source with Big Mustache and the Riz, to mention Richard Stallman and, if you know, Mad Dog.
Oh yeah.
Does it have anything to do with freedom and the free movement?
Did I?
The Riz and the Mustache.
You know, I don't know. It's like, I guess,
can I answer that?
20 years ago, everybody had long hair and beards. It seemed like what we hung out with, and I don't think it was a conscious decision. But that dog's hair is not as long as some of ours.
I like to say that Rob. So I'm going to say this. Rob's the Forrest Gump of free software. That if you hear about important movements or important things that have happened, if you look at the picture in the background, not at the guy up front, Rob's there.
Yeah.
I mean, stories about the EFF, his friend John Gilmore starting the EFF, because, you know, there was a little bit of trouble with, I'm not going to go into that, with the FBI, with Rob. Rob's been there through the whole thing, and the important thing is you don't see him, you don't see his face everywhere, because he's an active developer. He's actively working on this stuff. He's a really
I was actually one of the original people to sing to support the world's first business doing free software commercially and show that you can actually make money developing free software by giving all your software away for free and selling your services to fix bugs and add features. And so I spent probably 14 years working on the GNU compiler and debugger and things like that with Richard, of course. Mad Dog's not really a developer anymore. He goes back to the DEC days, Digital Equipment Corps. So. But yeah, it's funny, I'd go to one conference every year, and I'd say about half the conference is guys with bald spots and ponytails and gray beards. It's kind of funny. It's like a rock band that died.
Okay.
Yep.
Shall we have a break then? Back here in 15 minutes.